everyone, and welcome to episode 580 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good, Seth. Always excited to talk about the death of Magic the Gathering.
I mean, normal podcast, right? That's just what we do every week.
I thought we were doing something new today. What's going on?
We got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. I am still adjusting to my jet lag. And when I say adjusting, I haven't at all. And it's difficult. But that's it.
Yeah, the halfway around the world trip. I don't know how people survive that one. That one's I get wrecked just going to Vegas for a year and like coming back and I'm tired out. I can't imagine going to Singapore or whatever. So yeah,
that 3 hour time zone change.
3 hours. It takes me a week to recover. Yeah.
I mean, anyway. To be fair, I'll share you Vegas tidbits. Okay. Seth wakes up at, like, I don't know what the hell he wakes up, like 5 a.m., 6 a.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
Or Eastern time. So when he's in Vegas, it's like 3 a.m. He's like awake.
Yeah.
He is on old man time.
I learned.
We get to the buffet at 3 p.m. and we're like, let's fuck you in.
One time I got up so early, the casino wasn't even open. And I was like, I didn't even know that was possible. I thought this was like a 24/7 thing in Vegas, but nope, not even open. Anyway,
you did it, Seth.
I did it.
You found the window.
Yes. Anyway, today we got a fun one. We are going to be tier listing things that were going to kill Magic. So this has been a conversation literally for as long as Magic has been a thing. Mark Rosewater wrote an article like a decade ago about 20 things he thought were going to kill Magic and how they didn't. So we're going to be judging these based on how impactful they are today in 2026. So we got new stuff. We got some old stuff. So basically, how much did these things actually kill Magic? Are they still going to kill Magic? So that's the plan for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The ATB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing you to fit it in a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. EquipMag lets you snap all your gear to your playmat to move between rounds. Not that you're going to need it because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic. And we're going to jump into the things that are going to kill Magic tier list shortly. But I did want to mention one bit of news this week. It was a pretty slow news week. We get Strixhaven spoilers, I believe, starting next week. But we did have a ban list update today. Richard, what happened with the BNR?
Nothing really. Standard, no changes. I think that's one people were actually curious about. And then historic food chain is banned.
Which,
that's it.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think that should have
much.
Happened a billion years ago because just food chain is a busted card. But yeah,
I do not understand how they manage historic because they like pre-ban a lot of stuff that like they pre-ban Umezawa's Jitte that they didn't realize they had actually printed in an anthology 6 months ago and had been legal the whole time. So they pre-ban that with Turtles, but then they didn't pre-ban food chain. And oh my God, it literally was like turn two kills. We played it on stream last week a little bit. That deck was insanely busted in historic. So yeah, just historic things.
Surprise.
Surprise. Anyway. Our topic for today, things that are going to kill Magic. And we got, I believe, 12 topics on here. And we're going to jump into them. And like I mentioned in the intro, we're ranking these based on how impactful they are currently today. So we're not like, oh, back in 1993, this was a really big deal. Now, how impactful are they today? And let's start with a big one, Magic Arena. So Magic Arena came out in, 2019 alongside Throne of Eldraine, and it led to a lot of changes in Magic. We got the MPL, we got top five esports, we got people worried that Moto would die, we had people worried that Paper Magic would die. I remember people saying, oh no, once Arena's out, if it's really as good as it looks, no one's going to play Paper or Magic anymore because you can play an Arena in your underwear. We've had, 6-7 years with Arena now? How much did this actually kill Magic? What do you think, Richard and Krim?
I would say almost everything you just said is true. One, since Arena came out, I feel like yes, I have just played Arena in my underwear. And second off, like, it's like legitimately hard to leave the house, right? Yeah. I feel like a lot of paper magic when it comes to Standard, at least. In a way, I think it almost did go away, like, at least temporarily, just because it's so convenient to play at home.
Yeah.
But Commander, in some funny way, has actually pulled back Magic long enough, at least in the paper department, for Standard to kind of come back now. So, is it... I don't know if it absolutely wrecked paper Magic, but I would say that Arena did do something to paper Magic for sure.
Oh, I would think it goes even further than that. But Richard, I want to see what you think.
I was actually going to put it in D,
really,
the lowest one, in that it's actually helping Magic. I think it's getting scapegoat. So Standard paper Magic is dead. Okay, like, okay, you can be like, oh yes, in my neighborhood we still fire. Come on, Krim, give me the densest place on Earth, like LA. Well, densest place in North in United States. Yeah,
on
you've
Earth,
got 20 person locals firing. Right. Okay. Oh, quick side quest. Did you guys know that you can buy yourself into an RCQ? So I live in the Bay Area. Okay, not some like scrub town. The RCQs do not fire, okay? And it only takes 6 people to fire. So you can pay 5 people, so that's $250, get them to come in and just scoop to you continuously until you walk away as the RCQ champion, and then go to the RC. Did you know you could do that? I didn't know you could do that. Like, what? WTF, right? Like, Standard paper is actually dead. But I don't think it's Arena's fault. I think it's going to be some of these other factors that we're going to talk about, like release cycle, Universes Beyond, prices, stuff like that. I think if not for Arena, no one would be playing Standard at all, right? Today, all the Standard happens on Arena. If we just decided to turn off Arena tomorrow, people would not flood into their FNMs and play Standard. They would just simply not play at all. So the death of paper Standard is not Arena's fault. It's Commander's fault. It's whatever's fault. I think it's being scapegoated. I would put it in D.
You'd put it in D. Okay, so
okay, I would put it in D. I think it's actually helping. Without this, Standard would actually be gonzo. You would, if you're talking like modern or something, right? Like, there's this niche pocket that plays it, and that's it.
Well, okay, you gotta. I will admit that, you know, yes, Arena has saved Standard throughout like lockdown. Right. Like that was the only way you could really play Standard back then. Right. So you think it just did nothing? Like, you think, oh, wow. OK. All right.
I think it contributed something. But the other factors, like the rise of Commander, the doo-doo Standards due to power creep, the price of Standard, like, all of those have way more impact than Arena. And Arena is kind of the place where it's immune to that, right? Like, quick rotation, sure, doesn't matter. Just use a couple wild cards, right? I'm free to play. It's okay, right? So, I don't know, man. I think if we just deleted Arena, would Paper Standard come back? I don't think so.
No. So, I don't think that Arena killed Paper Standard. And I think there's definitely positives to Arena, for sure.
Definitely.
And I would say that overall, I think Magic's better with Arena existing, so I would also rank it fairly low. But there are a couple of things that I think it really has influenced. One big one that we haven't mentioned is I think that Arena has really contributed to the casualization of Magic. We've talked about this with Commander, but I think Arena has also led to the community just getting more and more casual, to focusing more. We've even seen Brawl growing a ton and becoming one of the bigger formats on there. So I think that's been part of it. And I think Best of One, which came about because of Arena, has actually had a pretty big, and I would say negative, impact on card design, where we see these cards that do everything now. And I think that those cards line up with Wizards trying to make cards that work in Best of One and make Best of One function. So now you get all these cards that just like kill everything, or charms with a whole bunch of different really powerful modes. And I think that is a direct result of Magic Arena, and I think that has actually contributed to making Paper Standard worse. So I dislike the design pressures that have come from trying to support Best of One as the most popular format on Arena. I think that has led to Best of Three being worse.
I don't... Wait.
I don't think
what design pressures are there.
Yeah, like hold on. I don't think like, oh, we better make this card like, I don't know, Archenemy Charm because of Best of One, right? Like I think that's just a card they would have done because they want more utility. Every card, it needs to be kind of like a Swiss Army knife, right? Like I think it's more of that than just like, oh, we need to make sure that all the Best of One gamers get their fun in.
I think that comes because of Best of One, though. I think the reason we're getting more and more of those cards is because you want these niche effects in your main deck in Best of One to make it function. You play a lot of Best of One, and I see you playing like your Soul Guide Lanterns in your main that you would never play in Best of Three. So we see more and more of these niche effects of like, I'm a removal spell that also exiles your graveyard. I'm a removal spell that also blows up artifacts is a way that you can sneak like artifact removal or graveyard into your Best of One decks and have a functional deck. So I think
I think that's just like, oh, right? You need to have something that is okay. Versatile in most situations.
Then I say Arena has contributed to power creep. Let's say that. Let's go with that then. Really? I think Arena is partly responsible for the power creep. But I would still
put it as
like
I disagree with the whole
BRC,
premise
but...
that Best of One has any impact on this. I think they shoot in the corner and like... maybe some person brings it up in a meeting once in a while, but I can't imagine them sitting down and being like, oh, we need to make this work in Best of One.
Remember they tried to do Pro Tours in Best of One. This was like the thing, top five eSport. We're Best of One now. Let's go play a Best of One Pro Tour, guys. And it didn't work, but that was the goal.
Maybe for alchemy cards. I don't know, man. Okay.
I'd rank this at like C.
I would be fine with putting it in C because I think there's some downsides, but overall positives.
Let me clarify this for the listeners too. So S means like this has or will kill the game.
Yes, this is worsening the game. This is like as bad as we can get. We should probably get rid of this.
Kill, because I don't know if magic can really die, but like very close to that. It has to be like very severely impactful.
So if it has had positives on magic, it should be...
C or D. Right?
Yeah, I think,
I think D is the mid, and then
fine.
C or D, yeah.
Okay.
And D would basically be like all upside, I think. Like, hey, we love this in every way, basically. So I think C is probably fine for Arena. Let's move on, though. We got a lot of these to get through. This one actually comes from Mark Rosewater. And it's funny that this was a problem back in like 1994, and we still see it a lot today. Bannings. And Mark Rosewater in his article talked about how when they first banned cards like Black Lotus and the Power Nine, there was actually a huge uproar and people were like, oh my God, you can't make us not play with these cards. I'm not going to play your game anymore if you're banning cards. And we see this repeated every ban list update, on social media, people complaining that something got banned, asking for things to get banned. So do you think just the concept of banning cards, would Magic be better if they did what some people say in the Twitter comments, which is never ban anything ever. Everything should just be legal and y'all figure it out on your own. Like, would Magic be better if Wizards never banned things?
I think that you need to have a ban list. That just makes it healthy for any game, right? It's more of how frequently you're doing it. Because I also kind of just despise this feeling that nowadays the default thing is just to always, like, have these outcries for just ban whatever, right? Just ban anything before actually letting it play out. But...
that's Arena's fault, too, by the way. If it wasn't for Arena, for Arena, we wouldn't complain about bannings.
I'd probably put this at a... it's D, right? It's a D. Like, this is actively good for the game, right? This is harmless.
I don't know if I'd say harmless, but I think they're necessary.
But it's a must. Right, this is a must. This is how the opposite of killing magic.
You must have the emergency ban button, okay? It's a must, okay?
Yes.
The problem is when you use it frequently. You know, it's like everyone should have a fire alarm, okay? If it goes off once every 5 years, you're like, oh, thank God I had this. It saved my life, okay? If it goes off every other week, you're like, WTF, what is going on? So I think the core issue is that bans are bad for the game. Like, if you buy cards... And then you can't play with them. People are not happy about that. And we see it like cross-cutting games, right? It's not just Magic. It's every single TCG. As soon as they ban something, people are very, very upset, even though it's like correct for the meta or correct for the health of the game, right? So if you know that, what you need to do is the opposite of fire, which is designed very conservatively so that you will not need to ban. And then, you know, once every 5 years, you slip up and then you do it, but like you're not happy about it. as opposed to designing cards so powerful that it's given that every set something will need to be banned, and then you go ahead and ban it, right? So I think that philosophy is actually incredibly bad, but we should always have the safety net of banning things, right? And I would go to that golden age of, like, after Jace the Mind Sculptor until Fires, where it was expected that nothing got banned every B&R, but if they somehow screwed it all up, they would fix it, right? But the bar was very high to go in and, like, enact this emergency power. Whereas today, we kind of just do it willy-nilly, and we're kind of expecting it. We're like, meta's a bit stale. Let's just ban something, right? Like, okay, right? But because we banned this, we got to ban these 8 other cards. So we're just going to ban these things, too. And then no one has confidence to buy paper cards. Like, I don't want to buy a $500 deck if there's the off chance it'll get banned next week, right? So... I think the willy-nilly bans is very bad for the game, but the emergency ban, I think, is a D, right? So it depends on how we want to split it up.
I will always remember, this was when Emrakul the Promised Sun got banned, so we're talking 2018 or something, but there was this kid that was like 14 or 15, and he was like, yeah, I started playing Magic, I got my birthday money, I spent it on Emrakuls, and then the next week they banned Emrakuls, I don't even know if I want to play this game anymore. And I was like, yeah, that I don't even know what to tell you, like, that does suck. So there's definitely downsides to the bannings. I think it also ties into the power creep aspect. Like, I think part of why there's so much conversation about bannings is because of the power creep. So all this stuff is so multifactorial. But I think basically, like, some amount of bannings have to exist, but I do think that the way bannings have been handled over the last decade or so is probably not the most optimal way for the game overall. So I would say, like, is this another C? Like, is this another C tier card where it's like, we need it to exist, but also it could be done better? Maybe B, somewhere in that range is probably where I am.
I think it's net negative. It's gotta at least be B.
I mean, in the ideal world, we would never have bannings, right? I think in WotC's ideal world, we never have bannings, but I don't think that world can exist. So I think that's probably a B.
When you say bannings, this includes restrictions, right? I guess, like, I think restrictions are bad.
Yeah,
I think restrictions
are
kind of
banning.
Too,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
So then maybe, because then there's a lot more, like, things you have to account for. But I think the action of banning is good. And I think that even banning when the meta's stale, ban sounds bad, but, like, imagine it just like a kind of like a, I don't know, a prompt to build around, right? Like, so it changes up standard, it changes up the stale formats. But Richard is right. Like, when you ban a lot, like Eldraine, the original Eldraine, then it kind of gets really bad. So, but I think bans are needed and good for the game. So I do not think, I don't view it as a negative, dude.
I will just also say, I used to think the exact same way, and on a personal level, I still do. But one thing I've learned over the last few years is I think that's my, like, super enfranchised content creator brain, and, like, more casual, less enfranchised people view the banning topic very differently than I do. Because I'm also, like, rotate constantly, ban all the time, I want fresh formats, but I don't think that's what a lot of people actually want, so... But we'll put it in the C tier.
I mean, I don't need things to be fresh. I love 3-year standard for that exact same thing. So more of the health is what I care about.
Next up, we have Alolan Eclipse Pack. Richard, what does this image represent?
Collector boosters, play boosters.
So we've got some booster changes over the year. Wizards adding collector boosters for the lotto effect, getting rid of traditional boosters for play boosters. How big of a impact did this have? Is this something that's killing the game? I'll say, I think play boosters made limited a little bit worse. I think that's something that might be true. But what do you guys think?
I mean,
I don't buy that argument, Seth. Everyone says that, but, like, if you just look at the best limited formats, they've been all recent. Like, a lot of them, like, consistently, they're bangers as opposed to the olden days.
Say it,
but
guys.
Because of, like, design. But if you just look at it, yes, I understand how, like, double rare packs and, like, bonus sheets and, like, random crap like that can affect you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but I haven't lost to Gumas I was Jite lately, Richard.
Yeah, I've only played Jite once through my entire romp through, like, bronze to mythic. Okay, like, it's so rare that it, like, rarely matters, right?
But that's true.
I don't know. Like, people always say that, and on paper, the arguments are sound. But in reality, if you just go over the limited formats and just give them a grade, all the recent ones have, like, outperformed the old ones. Obviously, there's some classics from the old ones, but in general, limited is better. I would say where it matters is you have no access to good cards anymore. Okay, so it's a feels bad, right? Like, back in the day, I opened a pack. I could open the best card for that set in that pack, right? It would probably be a foil mythic or something, right? Nowadays, I have zero shot, right? Like, I know there's some fancy fracture foil showcase thing. I know there's serialized cards. I know there's all these special treatments. And when I open a play booster, I have literal 0% chance of opening it. I would rather have that be 0.00001% and then for me to win the lottery when I open it. So I actually dislike it. However, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably not that bad compared to some of these other ones, right? So I probably put it in like B or C somewhere in there. But I kind of just want the buy one booster. You don't have to confuse your mom. She can just go to Target, buy the thing. We all have the same shot, right? None of this, oh, you don't make enough money? You get a play booster, right? Like for the people over here, they get collector boosters. Yeah. Like it just creates this like friction, which I know what they're trying to do, but it just reminds us that like, oh, you can't afford that card. That card's not for you, right? You don't even get access to it, right? Not even a lottery chance at it. You can't even afford to play this lottery, right? Like it's like, ugh.
Yeah. And it's made the game, like, with the changes, things got more expensive. And I think that was a real negative consequence to these changes. Like, because we got rid of, what, $90-$100 booster boxes, which it was for the entire time I played the game, from I started until I started doing collector boosters. 85 if you pre-order. Like, that was just the price. That's how much you paid. And I know it's inflation. Everything's more expensive now. But with the change, we saw, like, less cards in play boosters. And we saw less special sheets in play boosters. We saw the price go up on play boosters. We saw collector boosters get really expensive. So I think these changes in a roundabout way led to the game being more expensive, and no one's happy with that. Like Magic already has an issue with just being too expensive, so making it even more expensive is not a positive. So where are we from this?
I'm gonna be
what if you say because they made collector boosters and extracted money from all the whales, they can make all these special treatments that you really liked.
I mean,
right? As opposed to we all get standard border, we can't afford new art, so here you go, right? Like,
I mean, we can go really deep on this because collector boosters also made like the base versions of cards cheaper, which I think is a positive in some cases. It made foils basically bulk. if you're a fan of foils for some reason, foils are incredibly cheap compared to what they were 10 years ago. So there are some upsides there. But what do you think on this one, Krim?
Oh man, yeah, I do hate that, like what Richard really mentioned there, that one hit, right? Like, I hate that I know that if I buy this play booster, I won't get anything fancy, but at the same time, man, I guess that whole, like, everything you just brought up does kind of change that, slightly in my eyes, like, that does make me feel less bad about collector boosters, right?
Yeah.
I still think it's a B. I think you actually have about right there. Like, this is driving up the price of Magic. Although, did it? Because, I mean, it also made, like, base versions of cards so much cheaper. No one cares about, I mean, I still like base version cards, but damn. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I don't know where to put this because I guess which one do you think it actually did, right? Because it did make the game a little bit cheaper. It kind of just made it so that base versions nobody cares about.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think it's B or C. Like, if we just went back to normal boosters, I don't think the needle moves that much. Like,
would
maybe
the game still
it's a little
expensive?
More positive or a little bit more negative. I'm not even sure it's cheap. Aren't we in, like, one of the most expensive standards ever? Like, did it really? Like, yes, if you're playing, like, random bulk cards that no one cares about, they got cheaper. But, like, of the standard staples, like, did it really get cheaper? Not really. Yeah.
No.
Right? So,
I think it made individual cards cheaper. Like, I think individual cards are cheaper, but I don't think it's filtered into the entire, like, format because prices of the boxes went up alongside, like, the benefits. Which
I mean,
think,
if you account for the increase in a lot of stuff, right, like, in like just living in general, right, like, the...
the inflation, all that. This feels about right, though, right? Like the $400, you know, maybe $500 mark to get into standard, right? Because it used to be like $350 or something like that anyways. So,
yeah.
And everything outside of Badger Mole Cub sits around that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Where are we going to put this one? I have mixed feelings. Just leave it at B. Really. Leave it at B. All right, let's leave it there.
Sure.
Close enough. What about this one, Richard? Why do I not recognize this set symbol? Should I know what this
God,
is?
Oh, God, I knew this would happen. This was set symbol of a
commander?
Inflation, power creep, too many. That's the commander set logo, Seth. This is
commander.
We've had too many of these now. They all look the same. You can't tell anymore.
I actually think, I will start on this one. So is commander the thing killing Magic? And if you are someone who primarily loves 60-card formats, I think it's a big contributor. If that's how you engage with Magic, the fact that everyone would rather, or most people would rather play Commander now, that the game is mostly designed for Commander now, that there's so many Legends in your booster packs now, like, I think if you're a 60-card player, the Commander actually really has, in a very real sense, killed the kind of Magic that you enjoy playing, or at least greatly diminished it. But what do you guys think on Commander being the thing that kills Magic?
I think Magic is the most popular it's ever been. So I think it is hugely in part because of Commander, right? Because now it is Nerd Golf, right? Me and the buddies, we can sit down and just play this game, right? Like, say what you will. I love Standard, okay? I am a 60-card person first. I'd probably say that with my chest, right? But at the same time, I've never had this many people to, like, just care and play Magic and talk Magic with.
Okay. I mean, that's probably true.
I'm putting it in D, right? That's like a D.
I'm probably like A-ish, but...
Me, the Standard player, I might feel like a certain way, but like me, the Magic player, feels that it's a D, maybe even a C. Like a C at the lowest, because, again, Magic is the most popular it's ever been.
What do you think, Richard?
It's so S because it gaslit us into changing the definition of Magic. Right? So what is Magic the Gathering, right? It's a tactical card game where you sit down and you sling spells at each other, and you're supposed to... It was a nerd game, right? It was supposed to be a highly cerebral game where you use your skills to overcome RNG, right? There's a little RNG aspect to it, right? But it's like gamer chess or something. It's like cool chess, right? It's something like that, right? Where, you know, chess is like the OG, but it's too difficult. Magic the Gathering was a little easier version with RNG. We have flipped it, right? Now it's super casual. No one knows how any of the rules work. I bet you if you ask 9 out of 10 commander players, they don't know what sequencing means, really, right? I'm going to throw so much shade here, right? 90s. Like, the only commander players you enjoy playing with are the ones that used to be 60-card players, right? And they're just holding on to, like, those old skills, and they're, like, playing 60-card with, like, these new rules, right? But, like, because everyone's casual, you can't talk shop with them. Like, there's nothing to talk about, right? You're just like, oh, my favorite thing is this because that was my favorite movie. Yeah, cool. Yeah, right? It's not nice. Like, this is what I love about limited players. You can always talk to limited players. You're like, pick one. What is this? Right? This is my deck. What should I do? Right? Like, what do you think of the game at hand win rate is over here? Right? There's always things to talk about on a strategical level that goes super deep with 60 or 40 card players. I'm going to lump them together. 60 and 40 card players are of the same breed. 100 card players are different. And I think our 60 card players have been destroyed, and they've been gaslit into playing this other thing. And that thing is not nearly as enjoyable. So I do think long term, the game will die because you needed those super enfranchised people that would play your game through thick and thin. But the casual players, when they don't feel like it, they just won't play your game. Right? They're not invested. They didn't spend like 4 years learning on the play versus on the draw or whatever, right? Like they didn't do any of this, right? So they don't care, right? They just move on. So I would actually put it as S, and I actually feel very strongly about it. Like,
but like if you think about it now, right? Like talking shop with folks, I've never had this many people to talk shop with.
But it's right? superficial. It's like, I don't know. It's like talking about who just won on The Bachelor or something, you know? Like, yeah, you can talk about that to anyone, but it's like super superficial, and it's just like, you know, do you enjoy talking like that, right? Like,
I mean, maybe
don't you like playing the game of turn one volcanic island? What game? What deck are they playing? Right? Should you wasteland it? You know, like that was like the oh yeah, like we're brothers, we're sisters or whatever. You know, like we are together in this. Right now, it's just like oh, you have a commander deck you bought at Walmart. Cool. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You made some upgrades. You heard the podcast. Put a card in. Great. Right.
I enjoy Commander. I think Commander is a great format. And I think there's definitely positives to what Krim is saying of Commander making the game more accessible, bringing in more people. So I think it is true that Magic as a whole is bigger than it ever was. But I also just like can't get over like how left out the 60 card and 40 card players are compared to where it was like a decade or something ago. Like the shift is so big and like. When I started playing Magic, what I defined as Magic was 60-card formats, right? It was, like, standard or modern. Like, that's what Magic was to me for most of my life. And, yeah, I can see how Magic changes, and part of what makes it great is it's so many different things to so many different people. But I think the fact that it just diminished, like, 60-card play so much, to me, makes me rank it pretty highly as well. Like, I don't know if I'd go S, but I would definitely put it A tier, I think.
I would say Commander's like dessert. Like, it's great. You know, when you eat your meat and potatoes, you eat dessert. It's great. But when you only have your dessert, it starts going downhill. Now you have no energy. You're lethargic. You know, you're like wasting away because you're only eating it. You don't understand why it's so good because everything you eat is so sweet. Like, it's kind of just numbed it out. Right. So I actually enjoyed it where after a full Grand Prix day of like sweating it out, you kick it back and play some 100 card. Like the way it was originally designed, I think is the best. And like you don't over optimize, like you don't super think about it. You know what I mean? And you're just there to have fun. Whereas today it's like, oh, let's sit down, have a rule zero conversation. Did you optimize? Did you not? Do you even know what you're doing when you optimize? Like, do you really know that your deck is bracket 4 or 3? You know, like, oh, I think you're wrong. You know, it's like, oh, what are we doing? Right. Like,
that's a conversation about Magic, Richard. That's a conversation about Magic.
I want to sit there and like try to not insult you, you know? Like, well, you think that's bracket 3? Let me show you a real bracket 3, bro. You know, like I hate that this even happens, right? And then when you lose, you're just like, oh, you played unfair cards. You're like, what? Right? Like, just like hit me with the Badger Bowl, come, kill me. We scoop it up next game. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to sit there and debate that you played a cheap card that was above and beyond our bracket.
That happens at 60 as well, by the way.
As far as actually killing Magic, I think the thing you hit on, Richard, about just like the community becoming more casual, and if you're a casual player rather than the super hardcore lifestyle and franchise player, it's easier for you just to do something else, right? Like come play for a few months and be like, okay, that was fun. And now I'm going to go play this game or whatever. So I think that is like, as far as actually killing Magic, a concern I have long-term is if Wizards trains everyone to be casuals rather than optimizing for everyone to be super dedicated and franchise lifestyle players. I do think that increases the risk long-term that people just fade away. And next thing you know, like our game is way smaller than it was and actually having issues. So anyway, where are we going to put this?
Wasn't the game super small before we had more casual people, right? Like,
wanted to play with them.
But we were having like 4,000 person DPs.
We were at the point,
Krim.
The casuals. And I know that by today's standards, I think that we are considered
the
spikes, sweat
lords. Yeah.
But like, which is really funny because I think we are absurdly casual, right? But I feel like the game was a much smaller space. Way back, like what, like 2004 or whatever, or like what cons, if you want to go with one of the more popular standards. Even in the most popular standards, I felt like we as a game were still very small.
That's true. Although if you just want to play standard, I bet in paper, I bet you would get 10 times as many games in 2014 than you do in 2026.
Sure,
it would be
you
much easier
more
for you
games.
To just go and play a game of standard somewhere, a tournament of standard somewhere.
But I also think you could just play standard at home. That's why.
Then that is all. And arena. So where are we gonna put this? A tier.
B
tier. I know Krim's a disagree.
Feel like
what the difference? B, A or B, something like
it's
that.
It's gotta be.
Krim wants it in D. We want it S.
I'll be at
so.
B. I'm cool with B. I think collector boosters is more harmful than this.
We can put.
We gotta move on.
Yeah, we gotta go. All right, fire design. This one just because people get confused. Starting in 2019, fire stands for fun, inviting, replayable, and exciting, and that is the goal in designing cards. It also lines up with a very impressive era of power creep in Magic. Once they started trying to design cards in this way, that's when we got the Okos and the Uros and the last 7 years of Magic. I think that this actually has had a pretty huge negative impact on Magic. Like, assuming you're willing to say that the design of the last 7 years is because of fire design in this philosophy, I think that's had a pretty big negative impact on Magic. I'd put it as like a B or an A, but what about you guys?
Well, this would have started, what, during Ravnica Allegiance Teferi?
2019, Core Set 2020 yeah. preview season is when they published the article.
We've had really good standards in there. Up until Oko, I thought we had really good standards. And we've... Is this going to be lumped in with Power Creep? Because this is like
probably
what I'm kind of.
These five should be the same thing.
Should we add them together?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think these
power creep
like,
and
power
fire.
Creep
let's
and
let's
fire.
Move them together.
So like,
just so,
I do.
Just so it's clear, Kim, Guilds of Ravnica came out October 2018, and then the fire right. article was June 2019. So I think this would start like after Guilds of Ravnica standard is when they at least publicly announced fire design.
Isn't it War of the Spark? Was it?
Yeah, like, War of the Spark is awesome.
The beginning of fire. Yeah.
War of the Spark was so... I know you love that set, Grim, but my God, that set was busted. The static planeswalkers and stuff.
Oh yeah, it was so busted. But again, like, powerful cards isn't bad, per se, right? That's the thing. Like, this is where power creep is often viewed as a negative, because it is new things, stronger, yada yada, could lead to bannings. But I don't think it's necessarily bad, because it leads to some sweet new cards as well and fun play experiences. So, fire and power creep... I don't get me wrong. I've sat there running my head into a wall playing against like Oko and Stomps and all of that, right? Like
my big issue with this is the snowballing aspects of card design.
Sure.
And I feel like that really kicked off alongside fire. I don't know if they think that's exciting or invite, like, I don't know why, which one of the fire acronyms lines up with, we want all of our threats to snowball insanely. And if you miss a land drop, you die. But that has been the end result, I think, of that philosophy and design is just like, it's made the game so fast and so snowbally that, I don't know. And this is, I've been doubly impressed with this by playing the bracket matches with Richard, where I was like, wow, Magic, it wasn't always like that. I'm not actually insane. Like, I thought it wasn't always like this, but now I'm playing these games and it wasn't always like this. You could miss a land drop and still have a good game of Magic, and that's just like stuff like that is out the window now. So I think it's been pretty bad.
Yes, you're right. That is obviously true, right? We're way stronger than we were before, but we also used to just sit there and just admit defeat to some cards, right? And like a planeswalker was unkillable at a point, right? So this is more of, I think, the execution, like the way they went about some of the power creep, right? Like that may have been bad, because I do despise the one card like engines that can just win the game on their own, right? I think you need a few pieces to go with that to make it like an engine. I just hate that. This is tough. There's been a lot of bad things that have slipped through, but there's also been some really cool things that have come through as well. I know that it's easier to remember the bad and the times when we could just, you know, have a slow, dirty game, but like, I do like some of the versatile answers that we've got. I do really like some of the threats that we've had. There's been good things to come from power creep.
I think it's also fair to wonder how much of it is commander with some of the snowball threats. Like, how much of it is just straight up power creeping, and how much of it is printing standard cards that are actually designed to be exciting commanders. Like, I think Nadua wasn't a standard card, but Wizard said straight up, like, this was supposed to be an exciting commander, and then it broke modern. But what do you think, Richard? You haven't said anything on this one. Where are you at with fire magic and power creep?
Oh, that above S. Oh, my goodness. I hate power creep so much, okay? Like... It removes, so again, maybe I'm just playing the wrong game. Like, there's supposed to be a strategical aspect to this game, and the power removes it, right? Like, you're supposed to be, like, cranking out, like, quarter card advantages on all of your plays, and then after successfully executing four of them, you're up a card, okay? Now we're just, like, tra-la-la, stock up into another stock up into Quantum Riddler, into whatever, you know, like... You're just hemorrhaging cards like everywhere. You're hemorrhaging tempo. Like all the cards just do the thing. So it gives you like less agency and like there's really no point, right? And the thing that Seth brought about like missing a land drop overdoes any strategical element you could apply to this, right? Because the minute you miss a land drop, you've not only missed out on a play that turn, but that play was supposed to snowball into like two plays or something, right? You're now super duper behind. So I actually think the power creep has removed this strategical aspect of the game. It's made to appeal for more casuals, right? Like you don't need to put three cards together to eke out half a card advantage anymore. Just this one card, like Uro is the perfect example. It's the ramp, it's the card draw, it's the life buffer so you don't die, and it's your finisher. I'm like, did I even build a deck here? Right? Like, I just put four Uros in it. Like, what was the point of this, right? Like, these, like, Swiss Army knife cards that do everything in every situation. Seth was trying to attribute that to best of one. I'm going to attribute that to, like, lower skill level, right? Like, casuals can wield an Uro and, like, smack you silly with it, no problem. No skill required, right? So I actually think it's very bad. And for those of you that think you need power creep to win, just play Limited. Limited has consistently been, like, the best Magic the Gathering for, like, the last, like, decade, 15 years. And obviously, on average, the cards are less powerful than their standard counterparts, right? But you don't need that power, right? You can eke out advantages with Grizzly Bears and Hill Giants and whatever. So I don't like this power. It's, like, too much. And
but
I don't particularly feel smart
Grizzly
playing
Bear
Uro.
Magic fun?
Yes!
I don't think so.
Right?
I don't miss the wet noodle fights. I don't.
Well, that's because you got to play the 5-mana 5/5, Chris. That will overwhelm the grizzly bears. But is playing Uro fun? Like, do you feel accomplished when you play
Please
Uro?
Do
and you're like,
this...
yeah, I beat my opponent.
do not take this. Oh my god, yeah, Uro is a good time. No.
Power creep is literally inflation in card design. It is basically exactly the same. I think that power creep is inevitable and some level of it is healthy. And that's just like the economy, right? They want inflation to be 2 or 3% or whatever. And it's slowly going up and that's how it should work. And that's how we want it to work. But then when you have inflation go to 10%, everyone freaks out and it's the end of the world. And I feel like we've been getting a lot of 10% inflation years in power creep and Magic over the last
like
7 or 8
years. $10 million bill, Seth. Let's go. Right.
Yeah. I feel like that's where we're at. And then we're at the point where like, ooh, a tap ability on Vivi makes it unexciting. So we better delete that because maybe it's not going to be exciting. Like that card's insane. Even if it tapped, that's an insane Magic card. How is that not exciting enough? So yeah, I mean, I got to put this relative. I would put it in S or A. Richard's there, Krim, where do we go with this one?
Krim likes it. It's another SD situation.
It's S for Krim because he likes the power
creep. It's not a clean, like I think this will hurt the game if it's done poorly, right? But I am thinking about it not just in the macro as well, and there's a lot of good to come from it too.
Okay. S tier.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
I know Krim is conflicted because he's always like, what's the best card in the set? He's like, this sideboard mana leak card. Best card in the set, right? He gets super excited about like non-splashy cards because like that's how it should be, right? We're like, oh, this changes the blue X matchup completely, right? Like that's how we should think. Instead of like, this card has like five like paragraphs of text on it. It probably wins the game and stabilizes you. Like that was not as exciting, even though to a casual, that's like, oh my god, look how much this card does, right? But then you're like, it's not fun, right? It's more fun trying to get like that random sideboard card in the right match and flipping it, in my opinion. But most people don't share that. Most people don't share that kind of excitement, right?
All right, we got to keep moving on. Hasbro buying Wizards. And this one, let me just rant on this super quick. This is one of the most misunderstood things, I think, in Magic's history, where so many people blame Hasbro buying Wizards for basically anything they dislike about Magic, Universes Beyond, Secret Lair Drops, Commander, Power Creep. Choose a thing you don't like about Magic. And the finger always goes to, well, if only Hasbro hadn't bought Wizards. But the truth of the matter is, Hasbro bought Wizards in 1999. The game was 6 years old. It was during Urza's Saga era. It was before most people were even born. And they did really well owning Magic for most of the game's life. I think Magic would be worse if Hasbro didn't buy it. I think the most recent issues that we've had, some of the issues in the last few years, yeah, maybe they wouldn't be a thing if Hasbro didn't own them. But I don't even know if that's the case. And I don't think Magic would have even gotten to this point if Hasbro didn't buy them back in 1999. So for me, this is like the hardest of these and just like kind of a silly argument in general. But what do you think? Am I wrong on that one?
Seth, let me see your bank account. Did you get a wire from Hasbro?
1999. That was so
I agree with you. I know everybody's going to call us Hasbro shills. It's been like this since literally 1999, okay? I remember when we first looked at this. It was a couple years back. Everyone keeps blaming Hasbro. So we actually did a fact check. Like, when did it acquire? You would have thought it would be like 2020, 2015, maybe 2000. You're like 1999. We've always been playing with Hasbro, man. Like, it's always been a Hasbro product. So it's been like this for so long. I can't imagine putting it anywhere but D. Like, we actually love the Hasbro Magic the Gathering, right? Like, it's been 1999, yeah. Right? It's so long.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just, there's no way that this is actually the problem with Magic. But what do you think, Rem? Is anything to add?
Nah.
Yeah.
You got paid too? Nice.
Yeah. I don't.
Not beating those
shell allegations.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
All right, let's keep moving on. Modern Horizons. So Modern Horizons kicked off in 2019, I want to say the first one, and we've gotten three of them so far. They definitely changed Modern extremely. I would argue, for me, kind of ruined Modern in a lot of ways. But Modern isn't Magic. Magic's still chugging along. I would say if this was Things That Killed Modern tier list, this would be like way above S for me. This would be like the thing. But since we're talking about Magic as a whole, I would probably put it as like B or something. Because I think we've seen that Modern can suck and Magic can still keep trucking along just fine. But what do you guys think on Modern Horizons?
I think Modern is the S for me. Modern Horizons has completely ruined a format I once loved. So yeah. I don't touch Modern. I do not care anymore, right? Like, it's that format is absurdly dead to me. So now Modern Horizons is a product, before you yell at me, a product of power creep. It is strictly just power creep. Unnatural, yeah. Because it needs to be strong to play in an old format. There was no world where this was going to be a healthy power creep. This was always set up to be a failure, at least when it comes to gameplay. So there's some cool designs that have slipped through, but there are many that are bad.
Where are you at, Richard?
Hindsight is 2020, because I remember you guys specifically cheering on Modern Horizons.
Yeah?
We were like, oh, yes. Injection of new cards into Modern. That'll be great.
The idea is cool if you could do it.
But you realistically can't without the power creep, right? Like, you can't make a product and have like one card show up, right? Nah. I had a shower thought the other day, Seth. I was like, oh, this standard bracket has been so good. What if we just like took these like old decks and updated them with some of the new cards? Like, you know, what if I put, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, I just invented Modern. Modern Horizons, right? Like, that's what Modern was. You would take your old standard decks and add in a card or two from the newer sets to, like, bump it up a little bit, give it that juice. And since the power creep was low, they'd all, like, fight each other. It'd be great. It was all fun and games until they made Modern Horizons. And then now none of your old cards see play, aside from Primetime. They had it, you know, remember when Modern was, like, arguably one of the best formats? Like, it was standard was always number one, and then Modern would overtake it during Modern season, and when we had the Modern Pro Tours and stuff, we'd be super excited about it. Now it's just like, whatever, it's like this new format. There's no nostalgia, there's no history, there's no maining your deck. It's like main your deck until Modern Horizons comes out, right? So I think they took everything that was good about the format and then ruined it, and then and then it's like this, it's just this other format, which could arguably be very good, but it's not the Modern that we wanted, which was play your old standard cards that rotated out, right? That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that format doesn't exist anymore. If it does, it's Commander is the play your old standard card format, as weird as that sounds.
Commander's getting the Horizons effect too, right? You're starting to only play cards designed for Commander, right? They have to scale with four people. They can't scale with only one person, right? And then there's literally mechanics that have to do with like the command zone and your commander and how many times you cast your commander. So commander is getting that treatment. Just give it a couple years to fully be the format where you will not play any old card anymore.
So are we leaving it in S? Are we all S-ing Modern Horizons? All right. Well, we'll put it at the top since we're all in agreement. Exclusive promos, mechanically unique promos. So this started way back in the early 90s with Nelethani Dragon. They gave it away to Khan. Everyone freaked out. They promised not to do it. Then 25 years later, they kind of forgot, started doing it again with Nexus of Fate and Firesong and Sunspeaker. And then there was all the drama with Nexus and all that. So what do you think? Are exclusive promos the thing that's going to kill Magic? I mean, I think exclusive promos, I'm against them. I think we shouldn't do them. But I also think it would be very hard for an exclusive promo to kill Magic, because what's the worst case is probably Nexus of Fate, and we survived Nexus of Fate. Yeah, it was annoying, and it was expensive and avoidable, but the game survived that era. So it's hard for me to see how this can really kill Magic, even though I wish they would stop doing it. But what do you guys think?
Don't care. It's kind of bad, but even then, it like half the time it didn't even affect Standard, and then when it did, it wasn't even that bad. They shouldn't do it for bad PR reasons, but like it really didn't have too much impact. I'm gonna go about D. I don't think it's a positive for the game.
C is fine.
Yeah.
Is C neutral? Is that where we are with
somewhere
that?
Between B. Okay, maybe okay. D. I don't know. It's like whatever. It's not too impactful.
All right. Organized play changes. The Pro Tour, the NPL, the end of coverage, the end of GPs. How much has this killed Magic? And I think this is another one that, like, it depends on what kind of Magic you care about. If you're a 60-card player, I think the lack of this has really made Magic worse. But if you're someone who just plays Commander, you're probably like, what do I care about any of that? The game's actually probably better for me with them focusing on Commander instead of trying to throw a tournament for those sweaty players. So I don't know. Where do you guys put Pro Tour and organized play stuff?
A. Maybe A. S.
Really? So, ordering on S.
I live this in real time, Seth, because we're so used to it now, we don't understand. So you haven't heard me talk about One Piece that much recently, right? Because now I'm a sweaty casual. Because back in December, they decided to cancel all online tournaments. So it used to be that the case, like every month, like 2-3 times a month, you could play in large 1,000-player online webcam events. Right. And then it started getting real sweaty. Those reward prizes were like thousands of dollars. There was like allegations of cheating, collusion, whatever. And then they decided like, hey, we're just going to cancel all of them. And they didn't really replace it with much. They said, we're going to give you more store tournaments. And those are like 32 players tops, right? 64 players. And that's pretty much killed my drive to do anything useful with the game. Now I just engage super casually with it, right? I'll actually literally play decks made out of cards from my binder, right? Because I'm like, what does it matter, right? I'm playing like 16-person locals or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm not practicing anything. I'm not trying to learn anything. I'm not going to bling out my deck with, you know, hundreds of dollars of cards, because all I'm doing is showing up at locals and playing. So it basically killed all desire to engage in the game in a meaningful manner. That's how the Pro Tour is. Like, without the path to the Pro Tour, without the constant, you know, see the world, play the game, etc. Like, how do I become a better player? There's no drive for that. There's nothing to play, right? I can't even play, like, an RCQ, let alone, like, anything, right? There is no desire to get better and to study the game. It's just casual, right? So now, because I'm casual, anything can distract me, right? Oh, new movie come out, new game come out. Like, I'll just go play that because I'm not invested. Right. Whereas back in the day, it's like, oh, I really need to learn my Mulligan lines with Delver. You know, sorry, guys, this weekend's canceled. I'm going to sit home and learn Mulligan lines. Right. Like that's what made the true fans and the diehard fans. And without that, there's nothing. Right. So I don't know. Can you see I'm very anti-casual, even though I'm the most casual player ever? Right. Like I want to be that sweat lord. Right. But there's just no reason to do it. There's just no reason to do it. Right.
If you want a hot take, I think a lot of what we attribute to the issues that came from Commander and the casualization of Magic, I think a lot of that actually comes to Wizards not supporting organized play. I think there was a pathway in the late 2010s where Commander is booming and growing and we're doing Command Fest and we're making pre-cons and it's becoming the biggest format, but Wizards is still running qualifiers and Grand Prix and Pro Tours and supporting like 60 card play. And I think we live in a very, very different world now if Wizards had done that. But instead, Wizards de-emphasized 60-card play, decided to become an e-sport, which only lasted a couple years, and then they kind of didn't even bring anything back, and then there was a pandemic, too. So I think a lot of what people dislike about how Commander has taken over the game actually goes back to Wizards de-emphasizing organized play in the Pro Tour and not supporting both of them, and instead just supporting Commander.
Yeah. I mean, look, hey, the Pro Tour and, like, the path, like, everything Richard mentioned is so important. It's the reason I care about the game the way that I did, right? Like, I wanted to get better at the game as well. So I do think that there needs to be some kind of Pro Tour coverage, some kind of pro circuit, right? I think that's always good for the game, and it needs to be, like, Riftbound has already got, like, you know, these RQs that are fancy and lots of production. One piece I saw that Worlds was, like, in a hotel room. Like, someone's, like, it looked like a small, dimly lit hotel room. That was their
It's not even fully broadcasted.
Yeah.
It's been crazy with Riftbound. I don't even follow people for Riftbound, but just, like, my Twitter feed and my social media feeds are so full of Magic players talking about the Riftbound tournaments that they're going to that some weekends I see more about Riftbound than I do for Magic, and I'm following only Magic people, which makes me a little jealous that we're not doing that. So where are we putting Pro Tour?
I think the Pro Tour is very important. I don't think it is S, but I do think it is A, at least for all the enfranchised players, like the ones that care about the sweat, right? And it is a needed thing. So I do think it's somewhere around the A.
I will say it comes all the way down to FNM, right? The reason you go to FNM is so that you get physical paper reps in with your deck so that you remember the triggers, you can shuffle, etc. Because even back in the day, we grinded on Magic Online, right? But you needed to go to FNM to get your reps in. And maybe you played a funsy deck or maybe you played your real deck, but you need like, oh, can I remember my triggers? Can I remember board state? Can I do combat math, right? Because the digital clients don't give you that ability. So that would affect like even like FNM, the most casual play. You still had your sweaty players coming in to make sure they got their reps in. So I really like that part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, definitely missing.
Which is why I'm excited that locals, like the importance of locals firing is huge. Any game.
Yep. Yep. Definitely agree with that. Well, let's leave it in the A tier and let's move on to the reserved list. So this is an old-timey one, but an old-timey one that still comes up these days when people, actually just a couple days ago, I saw a big thing going around on social media where people wanted Volcanic Island reprinted because of the Deadpool secret lair drop. It became a thing again. So the reserve list, a promise from the early 90s where Wizards made a list of cards they would never, ever, ever reprint. And here we are 30 years later, and they've stuck to this promise. The sad truth of the reserve list is it's like 20 cards, 30 cards that really matter. The original Dual Lands and Lion's Eye Diamond and some other staples. And then there's a bunch of chaff that no one even actually remembers exists that's on the reserve list. I think the fact that it is 32 years later and the game is bigger than ever is probably pretty good evidence that the reserve list didn't kill Magic as much as I personally hate the reserve list. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of forget the reserve list exists only because I don't play with those cards ever. I don't ever see them. They're just like art pieces, right? Like they're cool. They're like, you know, sweet to talk about and like look at, but like they don't actually ever come up in my day-to-day when it comes to playing Magic. So I think this is like, I hate the reserve list. I don't think that it should exist, but like it doesn't really affect me or a Magic player me.
I think so, pre-modern is the place it affects me the most, I would say, where the prices of pre-modern have gotten wild because of the reserve list.
I mean, I saw Smother in foil is like $200 bucks because of pre-modern.
It's kind of wild now. What do you think, Richard? Reserve list? Killing Magic?
It saved Magic. We're never beating the shilling allegations.
Wow, you can get away with saying you like TMNT, but you cannot come out and be pro-reservist.
I know everyone hates it, right? But again, like Seth said, basically our whole Magic life, we've had the reserve list, and Magic's been fine. And also, I think it literally did save Magic when they made Chronicles and lost all player/collector confidence. The reserve list, like, saved it. Right? So I don't know, man. It's got to go deep. But when someone looks at this, they see Hasbro reserve list down there, we're never going to live this down. But it was kind of fine, right? Like, it really only affects legacy pre-modern formats that barely anyone plays. And let me get straight. If we just unreserve list them tomorrow, I don't think legacy would suddenly be booming. Okay. Like, yes, there will be more players, but it's not like that was the thing holding it back. Or maybe it is, but I don't know. But if modern can't get a foothold, like, how's legacy gonna get anywhere, right? So I don't know. I think it's fine. I do, like, people try to divorce collectors and players, but they're one and the same for a lot of the cases, right? Like, you know, when people are like, oh, collector boosters are for collectors and play boosters are for players. But I'm like, actually, what if I'm both? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you have no confidence in the card's holding value, would you really pay $500 for it, right? And the reserve list is some attempt to maintain value on it, which is the same thing that people dislike, right? But it's also the same thing giving people confidence to buy that $500 card. So I actually think, how about this? If we abolish the reserve list tomorrow, there's a good chance the game falls apart or like has like super negative repercussions.
No yes. way.
Yes, I think no. it would.
Wait, what? No way.
I think anyone holding on to like those $100,000 Magic collections, they'd be like, whoa, right? Like, I don't want any of this anymore. They would get rid of it. I know players will be like, oh, good riddance. Right. But like, actually, those people kind of propping it up. So I think those people will be extremely upset. I think as a store, you would not want to hold high end expensive cards anymore. I think it would actually have a lot of negative repercussions. So I would say just leave it as is and don't touch it. But if you remove it, there's a chance that the whole tower falls down. Maybe it's fine. Maybe it recovers. Right. But I think there's a good chance that people are pissed and it will come down.
I mean, no, I don't think expensive cards.
Rosie, if we just removed it tomorrow?
But we have expensive cards now, right? We have like the $60,000 Infinity Stone or whatever, and we have the
because they have a reserve list. Like, the serialized cards are a form of reserve
kind
list.
Kind of a reserve list.
They just call it something else, right?
I guess.
It is similar.
Yeah. But like, but now you have a play. I don't know. That's a whole different topic. Yeah.
I know it sounds really bad, but aren't you afraid what will happen if they remove the reserve list? I would not be sleeping easy.
I am actually not afraid of what would happen if they got rid of the reserve list now. Although I will say, I think out of everything we talked about, there was a very real chance if they didn't do the reserve list in 1995 or whatever, it is possible the game actually would have died in the early 90s. Because you got to remember, this was a game like 2 years old or something. This wasn't Magic when people have 20 years of collections and their whole life built around it. This was a brand new game. And everyone having their cards so devalued really, really scared people with Chronicles. And I think there was an actual chance if they didn't take some drastic action then that it might have actually killed Magic. And we wouldn't even be talking about it today because it would have died in 1996 or something because of Chronicles. So I think it would be fine today, but I do think it was probably a necessary evil at the time, I would say. So I assume we're putting this relatively low then?
Let's put it in C so people don't yell at us.
All right. And now play the Hasbro ad. Play the Hasbro ad.
Play the Hasbro ad.
Yeah.
Right.
We have two more to get through. Secret lair drops. Are secret lair drops the thing that's going to kill Magic, Richard?
Straight into the D. Straight into the D.
Give it the D. It's fine,
Give
right?
it the like, D. Give it the D.
I mean, like, I don't know. It just makes Wizards money hand over fist. Did it really affect us in any way? I can't really see. Aside from people getting upset that they can't buy, like, whatever secret lair. Like, yeah. I guess, like, maybe it killed LGSs slightly.
I heard like, LGSs a little.
Maybe a lot, actually. I don't know. Like, there's some negative repercussions to LGSs.
I think Wizards selling on Amazon actually hurt probably local game stores more than Secret Lairs probably hurt local game stores. I think just being able to buy your boosters on Amazon through Wizards was really bad for them. Secret Lairs, the only thing I would say is I don't like the mechanically unique cards. I think there are potential negative consequences from the mechanically unique ones, but in general, they can put Dwight Schrute on a card, and I honestly, like, it's hard for me to get riled up over a secret lair card. Like, it's so easy to avoid. Like, I can just not go to the website. Odds are I'll never see one in the wild. So a secret lair is out of any card in Magic. I can kind of pretend that they don't exist if I don't like them. So it just makes me hard for me to get too upset about them because they're so easy to just, you know, stick your head in the sand if you don't like them.
And the mechanically unique ones don't apply in the main, you know, formats.
Yes.
Like Commander?
Also,
what do you mean?
Also.
Why does oh, sorry.
You actually see it all the time, right?
Sorry. Like, let me
is that
reiterate.
A magic card? Like, what is
a
that? What is that?
Oh, it's a 60-card competitive format where I care about something, right?
Like the dead format.
there also, I guess, is a little negative consequences from not being able to know what the cards are. I've noticed that on coverage sometimes that people play some secret lair card. I'm like, what are they? What is that? I don't even know what that is. So there's a little.
But
bit
Seth,
there.
Let's not pretend that some cards have so much text that it may as well just be a foreign card to me because I can't read it.
True.
I'm not reading it.
So you know what's funny? So I was at like an LGS. It was like in a mall, right? So it wasn't like a real it's still a card shop. It's in the mall, and I was looking at a case of Secret Lairs, and my wife is like, "What are you looking at?" And then I'm like, "Oh God!" Like my wife, I've been playing Magic cards and doing Magic for like the longest time. My wife used to play Magic, and she's like, "What the hell are these?" And I'm like, "Oh,
wow.
It's over, right?" Like it's like people just simply cannot recognize the frame and like that it's a Magic card anymore. I see that's one of the negatives of Secret Lairs, but also that applies to like all the showcase versions and stuff as well. So it's not Secret Lair exclusive.
Every
but it
game
does
is,
give you chase variants, right?
There's upsides.
Every
to the
game
chase
is trying
too.
New
People
borders
like
and showcase treatments.
Yeah, but they have this iconic. You're like, that's Ahri with the weird border. That's clearly a League of Legends Riftbound card, right? Now it's like, here's some weird thing, and I don't know what it is. Plus, it's a weird border. Like, what is that?
But they
right?
Riftbound just announced the ultimate rare, right? So, like, for the next set, right? So every Yu-Gi-Oh! Has, like, gone now to full border, right? Full art. They've never done that. So every game is just slowly adding more and more treatments to their game. As long as you still have the basic one, and for not $1 million, that's what I care about.
Plus, Magic has iconic characters too, Richard. Like in our last category, Universes Beyond. Is Universes Beyond the thing that is going to make Magic die? Boy, we could probably do a whole podcast on just this topic. What do you guys think on this one?
I think you could safely assume where I'm going to go with this. I think this is
oh,
just...
Oh, I know. We know where the Slop Goblin's going.
Rather than beat a dead horse, why don't you two tell me how you two feel about Universes Beyond?
I think that Universes Beyond has been both a positive and also a thing that could kind of kill Magic. It's somehow both at once. Like, it's led to some of my favorite sets in recent years, and it's also led to a huge amount of negativity in the community. It's led to people actually not playing, some people actually like not playing the game anymore or skipping sets and entire things, which I think is actually kind of a negative. I would say overall, Magic is better with Universes Beyond existing. But I do think there's real negative consequences of the heavy focus on Universes Beyond, too. So I'd probably put it somewhere in the middle, personally.
Good political answer, Seth. I think it's fine. I think it's good for the... So
good
I think
political
people,
answer.
I think people...
Saffron Olive, 2028.
People scapegoat Universes Beyond and use it as a complaint for, like, I'm not happy about Magic the Gathering. And Universes Beyond is, like, the most in-your-face thing you can point to. But, like, if I was CEO of Hasbro or Wizards, Universes Beyond would be one of the last things on this list that I would fix. So I would put it under C or D. Like, I think Power Creep, the death of organized play, I think those more negatively impact me than Universes Beyond. And I think people just see, like, oh, here's a green turtle. That looks stupid. Let me just harp on that. I think, you know, like, that happens, right? But I think overall, Universes Beyond has been great for Magic, right? We've had our biggest growth. We had our biggest sets. Some pretty good sets, like Final Fantasy, Avatar. I would say Turtles is actually a decent set. No one wants to listen to me, but, like, Limited has been great. But, like, it's really, you're not happy about FNM, you're not happy about organized play, you're not happy about power creep, you're not happy about card prices, you're not happy about access to secret lairs, and then you kind of just project that onto Universes Beyond. And specifically the ones you hate, because no, I don't see anyone blaming Final Fantasy, okay? Like, Final Fantasy is just as Universes Beyond as Turtles, but people are like, oh,
and
that one gets
directly caused some price spikes.
I mean... I think it's just easy, right? Like, you have a piece of art you think is cringy and everyone's memeing on. It's a very easy place to point your rage at a food chain from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with
which
its
was awesome.
Ridiculous art.
Ridiculously fun
rather
art.
Than trying to describe why the combination of
pizza,
the focus on Commander with fire design and power creep is greatly diminishing the ability for Magic to be a skill-based game, and like play draw is becoming way more of an issue. Like, the rest of it's very complicated, but it's very easy to be like, man, that art sucks. I hate this set. I hate Universes Beyond. So I think that's why people tend to default to it. So where are we putting this? Go ahead, Richard.
A D.
I will say that,
I know, like, Krim.
People did this with, like, blocks. I know, like, Morrow had the recent article about, like, small sets or whatever, and people are like, bring small sets back. But, like, I think people, again,
no, please
are just,
do not.
Like, they're just taking all the things they're upset about and just packaging it against Universes Beyond. So the real one argument against Universes Beyond is that Wizards is not developing their own IP, right? And IP, at the end of the day, is one of the most powerful things in the world. Like, think Pokemon. Think One Piece, like League of Legends, etc., right? Like, it's the IP that matters. I would say Commander probably has just as much to do with that. Like, remember when they used to try to push Jace? But because Jace is a planeswalker, you can't push him anymore because everyone uses legendary creatures, right? And then, so all of our best cards of recent set have been slotted to legendary creatures, and then our planeswalkers fall by the wayside, right? So maybe the Magic TV series / movies and stuff will help it. Like, Wizards needs to develop their own IP. But again, they've kind of done nothing with it for like 25 plus years. So maybe just give up on it and just embrace the UB. But ideally, they would have their own IP that we can then put into other AAA titles, not Destiny after it's already dead, right? Like, actual, like, they come out and want to collab, right? So that is the argument against Universes Beyond, right? But beyond that, everything else seems like fine. Like, I think it's really you're unhappy about other things, but I don't know.
I mean, I think there's long-term risk, like you said. There is long-term risk that if you diminish your own IP so much that eventually if you want to stop doing Universes Beyond, like, or it's not working anymore, or tastes change. Right now, I was listening to this podcast, and they were talking about how it's not just Magic. It's like the world right now is like all about crossovers and like nostalgia. And that's just like the age we're living in media wise. So I think it's if that changes 5 years from now, though, and people are like, man, I hate all these crossovers. I want all original stuff. If you don't maintain your own IP, you might have a hard time getting back to that point. So I think there's like long term risk like that. But I think in general, it's mostly been fine, despite some sets I don't like. So
I got something crazy that I just put right there with growing your IP. I don't think that growing your IP can just be making a good game. I think Pokemon has had its anime and all of that, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Has its anime. One Piece has a whole manga, obviously, an anime. So I do think that for you to grow your IP, you could drop some of those banger books, right, out there. Let's just assume those bundles were not with the most poorly written books. and assume they were just nothing but heat. Even with that, I think that would not grow Magic's IP. I think you need to get into some other mediums. We've seen dead games come back, like Cyberpunk, just because of the anime. Edgerunners brought it back to life. So I think Magic needs this movie. I really want this to be good. And I hope it's because the director also played competitive Magic. So that I think is really cool. And when you talk about growing your IP, I think it's got to be somewhere outside of your game, so that somewhere little Timmy can also enjoy Magic without having to play the game.
So
I know it sounds weird.
You're saying they can't just put loot on 30 more cards next set and have an IP now, Krim? That's
Look,
not how it
I've
works.
Watched Gremlins, I've watched Critters, and I think loot is just that, and I love those two movies. So, call you know, again, you will get my vote for loot, but that will not grow the IP.
So C? I mean, we can't put D because there's some downside. So C tier? Is that where we're landing?
What's the downside? C? Magic's the biggest. We're going to have too much fun, too many friends to play with.
Spider-Man.
Too many friends.
The downside. Sorry.
Open pass.
Where was Spider-Man the problem?
I mean, there's Omen Pass. They're more expensive than normal sets.
Oh, yes.
Like, there
Hold
are
on.
Like actual downsides to Universes
yes.
Beyond
yes.
that aren't just memes.
Omen Paths is the worst thing ever. I hate that. I hate that there are two versions of a set.
And just having to pay more for the cards. Like, yeah, just the sets cost more because, yeah, Wizards has to pay for the other IPs, so it costs a little bit more money. So there are some legit downsides. But anyway, that's our things.
One more thing about the Pro Tour, and all of that needing, support. That also, like you said, it trickles down to, like, F&M. It also used to be an era where you got promos you wanted. Nowadays, if I go out to a spotlight, I get, like, you know, Laughing Jasper Flint, right, as my promo that I spent playing 19
He's laughing
rounds.
At you for spending your whole weekend trying to earn him. Yeah.
That's the person that's laughing, right? Like, these are some of the worst promos I have ever seen in my life. In every other game, there is a top eight, you know, like a champion stamp, right? Riftbound, One Piece, all of them have killer promos that you want to play for. And, like, if I go out to a tournament and get a best of card, that's $1,300, $2,000, right? Like, you know what I mean? The Magic does not have that right now. And I'm telling you right now, Force of Despair is not going to draw me out, right? Like, I'm sorry. They really got to work on the promo game. Pokemon has good promos, and they don't even have a player base as big as Magic, right? So,
do you remember when they had good promos? Final Fantasy. Right.
Oh,
If you go way back to the MPR days where they gave you like Texas Lightning Bolt, I don't know why they're being so stingy about these cards they print up out of nowhere. Like, literally, like, get the chase card, like, of the set, like Vivi.
Yeah.
Make a spend money, get alternate art, get an alternate frame, make it a promo, an F&M promo, just a participation promo, a winner promo, whatever, and hand it out like candy, and people will show up just to get it. And then they'll be there, and they're like, I might as well play the game when I'm here, right? So they do that, right? Like, I don't know why they're so stingy with the promos. They can just give you chase cards, right? Like, give me, like, not even the stupid, like, what is it, full frame, they call it? Give me something like you would sell in a secret lair. Give me an alternate art version, new art, like new frame, and then just give it away for free and then watch people all come
and
in, right?
Put winner. Just anything that, because all the other games do that. Like, it's like a base version. Oh my god, that would be so funny. Dude, Magic would change the game if you found the last place player and gave them.
You get the loser promo.
Yeah, Mr. What is it with NFL? Mr. Irrelevant, right? When you're the last person picked?
Exactly. Promos, that is also a big one. It's so frustrating because it's such an easy fix and you know how to fix it, but I don't know why it's surprising because they're kind of stingy in every aspect at the moment. But anyway, that's our tier list of things that might kill Magic. We're going to kill Magic. You've seen how we rank them. Let us know what you think. Which of these things might still kill Magic? What did we get right? What did we get wrong? Let us know in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.